This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Martin Falk. You're the winemaker at Three Choirs. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, thanks. Yep.
Where's Three Choirs based?
Three Choirs are on the west side of England, sort of halfway between Bristol and Birmingham, fairly close to the Welsh border.
It's Gloucestershire, isn't it?
Gloucestershire. So we're situated in amongst the around the Cotswolds, the Welsh Mountains, and the Malvern Hills. Nice little horseshoe.
Yeah, very scenic around there.
Very nice. Yes. Yeah. Very good.
I went out to visit you guys a year or so ago, and on the way out, there was loads of those traction engines, steam engines, come chattering around.
There's a local the Much Markle steam rally is quite a. Quite a famous rally, I believe.
Is that what it was?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, they're not very fast on the road.
No. They we have a slow pace of life out there. It's quite nice, away from the city.
How did you get into wine, Martin?
Well, I initially qualified in agriculture and horticulture at Cirencester, and my intention was to go into farming. And I got the opportunity to work at the vineyard, and really things grew from there. I then went away and did a fair bit of work in Australia, and came back here and took over the winemaking at Three Choirs.
What year was that?
1988.
Oh, so you've been doing this for quite a while now.
I've been around a while, yes. Yeah. It's and every vintage is different. There's a different challenge every year. And I thoroughly enjoy it.
What's your best vintage so far? Or what's the one that's been most exciting?
Oh, well, we've had excitement for different reasons. We've had very big vintages where the excitement's all been about where on earth are we going to put the juice once we've got it out of the grapes because we've run out of tanks. And we've had other vintages where the quality has been so fantastic that you just sort of revel in wines almost making themselves in the tanks. And 2007 is probably the best so far for me in that sense.
We'll touch on 2007 later on. But tell me a wee bit about Three Choirs, about your vineyard siting.
Well, we're...
Are you wet?
No, we're pretty dry, really. We've got these... surrounded by these hills that take most of the rainfall. We've got very sandy soil as well. We're sort of in the Severn Vale, really. And it's a very well-known area for top fruit growing. So there's a lot of strawberries, raspberries, black currants, a lot of apples. And so we knew when the vines were first planted there that it was going to be a good fruit area. The very good drainage that we get from the sandy soils helps. And I believe that sandy soils also give you a little bit more fruity character in wines. And I think that whilst we might miss out a little bit on the steely backbone that some people get off chalky soils, we do get this nice aromatic style of wine.
When you say steely backbone, is it more of a acidity-based type thing?
I don't think it is quite acidity. I think that it is... it's almost a slight flinty earthiness that you get in wines that are grown on chalkier soils. Sandy soils, to me, just seem to give rounder fruit, but a little bit softer. But it's not actually directly acidity. It's just this slightly aromatic style that seems to suit our soils.
Okay, does that mean that you're not really focusing in on the sparkling wine? Because you guys do a couple of different sparkling wines.
Yeah, we do produce sparkling. We've been great fans of Sauvignon Blanc for sparkling wine. And we've watched others come along and produce Pinot Noirs and Chardonnays that have been fantastic. And, it's been brilliant for the industry that people like Knight Timber and Ridgeview have gone out and taken the world on in the sparkling wine market. I don't have the confidence that our site is quite right for that. I must confess I'm also a little bit worried that there could be a little bit of overkill. And there's quite a lot of people who are starting to pursue that style of wine. So we're very happy just to sit back and let that happen and concentrate on what we feel we're good at.
Which is
this aromatic style from varieties like Segerreber, Bacchus we have a lot of success with. And so that's really our plan for the future.
See, Segerreber is a grape variety I've seen in blends, and I've tried in blends, but I've never had it by itself as 100%. Do you guys produce 100% Segerreber?
We do. We do quite a lot of single varieties, which we sell mostly directly from the shop and mail order because they're in such small quantities. But Segerreber as a single variety is very interesting. It's got a very, very short ripening period. So the time from flowering through to veraison is about 65 days, whereas you talk about Chardonnays and such like being 90 days plus. So it suits our climate very well. Produces a very ripe grape quite early in September. So we've got ripe grape with low acidity, lots of aromatic qualities. People talk about lychee and grapefruit and such like as being the style of the wine. And it's very nice to have something that's always fully ripe coming into the vineyard, into the winery. It doesn't always happen in England, but this variety always does.
Okay. And have you considered blending it, or do you always...
Yeah, we do use it. We use it as a single variety and as a blend. It goes into a wine called Willowbrook. And also there's a wine called Variations Aromatic, which is also Sigareba based. The problem this year, in 2007, is that out of all of the varieties that were hit badly, Sigareba was probably the worst.
Oh, really?
And there is very little of it about, I'm afraid, from 2007.
So tell us about 2007, because I know it was a problem vintage for a lot of people.
Yeah,
what was the story?
I think probably we were hit quite badly for two reasons. One was we had a very big crop in 2006, and the vine in general has a tendency to want to do big crop, little crop. So a lot of the management goes in to try and to iron that out. But the big crop in 2006, followed by this extremely wet weather we had in June, July, especially in Gloucestershire, actually caused a lot of the fruit to set very badly.
There was big floods, wasn't it?
Flooding. We had some quite dramatic times around us. Certainly Gloucester went underwater, and whilst we were a little bit higher, we were sort of looking down on it. But
my data centre went underwater with my servers a kit.
Yeah, it wasn't funny, and there's still a lot of people in the area who are still waiting to move back into their houses. It was a fairly traumatic time.
Yeah.
But the vines looked like they'd set. But it was only really once we had hit the end of July and August the flowers aborted, and the crop we could see was very small. The grapes themselves didn't actually make huge size either. But what we did get was a couple of weeks of quite nice sunshine at the end of August going into September. And being a small crop, it ripened fantastically. And the weight of the wine that we've got in bottle from 2007 is something we've never really seen before.
When you say weight, do you mean in terms
just,
of...
Just the characteristic, the flavour and the body in the wine is it's a lot more intense than the 06 vintage.
Sure.
But unfortunately, there's very little of it. So from Three Choirs' point of view, most of it is going to be sold through the local shop and through mail order. But there will be a bit about.
I'll make sure I have to try some of it. Get the odd bottle here and there and give it a good whirl. Do you think that because of, you know, you said boom-bust cycles every year or so, do you think that that means that the 2008 crop could be quite a big one? All things being...
There's two ways of thinking about it. You can be an optimist and say yes, because you can never get two crops as small as 2007 in a row. I remember the previous smallest crops we've had were probably 1995, which was followed by a very big crop in 96. Followed by a small crop in 97, and since then we've been pretty even, really. So from that point of view, you can be fairly optimistic and say, yeah, that really ought to be a pretty good crop this year. From a pessimistic point of view, you could say, well, a lot of the potential for the following year is set in July, during the flower set, and because that weather wasn't particularly good, maybe there isn't going to be an enormous crop there. But normally with English vineyards, there's plenty of bud, plenty of potential, and we actually go through the vineyards after flowering, pulling stuff out normally.
Yes. I was going to ask, do you do a green harvest?
So you know the misconception is really that English vineyards struggle to produce enough, but in fact it's actually controlling your crop to produce the right amount to ripen it properly. That's the challenge.
Yeah.
So. There's no reason to believe that there isn't going to be a good 2008 harvest.
It's always hard, though, isn't it? Because you've got to sort of second guess what the second half of the summer's going to be like for the ripening before, so you can work out how much fruit to pull so that you know it's all going to ripen.
Yeah, it is. And the earlier you do this, the better. And if you leave it too late, then the benefit that you get is very little. So you do have to be quite bold and actually just after flowering go and pull some stuff off.
Why do you think vines do this boom-bust type thing? Is it because you haven't been doing enough green harvesting in the big years, or is it just a function that the plant likes to store sugars in the roots, or what's going on there?
Well, I think it's very difficult to equate the way the vine behaves totally with the crop. because a lot of the variation in yields comes through the rainfall that happens in the summer. And we get a little bit more rainfall than most of our continental friends. And certainly I remember 1996 being a huge crop that virtually doubled in size on the vine in late August. So it was nothing to do with how the vine had actually produced. It was just the sheer size of the grape.
They just swelled.
They swelled so much. And you do get quite big variation in grape size from vintage to vintage.
That's not a good sign for quality, though, isn't it?
No.
If the grape's sucked up a load of water, you're going to lose sugar concentration, flavor concentration.
The whole thing becomes diluted, so it's certainly not a good thing.
Yeah.
But it is a very difficult thing to control, because no matter how many grapes you have, they will swell if the rain comes at the wrong time.
You've got sandy soils, and if I remember rightly, you're mainly on a hill, aren't you?
Yeah. Drainage is very good. The water runs away pretty well. We do actually compensate by giving the vine a fair bit of competition. We leave grass in between the rows, keep that mowed off, and we actually, as the vine gets older and gets more vigorous, we actually cut out every other vine in the vineyard to actually make the ones that are left work harder. So there are all sorts of ways to try and combat it, but at the end of the day, if the weather really does go against you, I'm afraid that is a problem. It does happen.
I heard a rumour, and I don't know if it's a rumour or true or not. I thought you guys were growing some grapes under polytunnels or glass.
Rumours that get about, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yes, we're doing a small experiment. We've put up some tunnels that are removable, so they're not permanent structures.
Yep.
But we've planted some Cabernet Sauvignon and some Merlot, and the idea is that at key times of the year, when they need a little bit of help, either for flowering time or ripening at the end of the season, we can pull the polythene over the tunnels and actually give them that little bit of help. There's people that are doing it over here already. Beanley are very very well known for their success with Cabernet Sauvignon.
Who's this?
Beanley are down in Devon. Very small vineyard that has produced some exceedingly good quality and created quite a bit of interest in the past. So we thought that it was just a nice little thing to try.
How many grape vines are you growing? Two?
No. You actually increase the planting density. We've gone down the classic claret route, really, of planting high density, very few buds per vine, and trying to get maximum quality from it. It's only an acre or so, so it'll never be a world breaker, but it's interesting.
Have you got crops off there yet?
No. Well, we should have had one last year, but because the season was so awful, it really wasn't enough to do anything with, so we didn't pick it. So this next harvest will be the first proper harvest that we get.
2008 Cabernet.
2008 Cabernet Sauvignon.
Are you going to do it as a Cabernet Sauvignon, or are you going to blend it?
I've got to work out the legislation at the moment, because that's all changing. I think, hopefully.
It's not an approved grape variety, is it?
Not at the moment. No.
No.
No. We probably shouldn't be talking too much about it, I suppose. But it's I'm confident that the laws are changing at the moment. There's a lot of things changing in the legislation field. So I'm sure that there's a way around it, and as I say, it's going to be such small volume that it's not really going to be too much of an issue if we just bottle it up and drink it ourselves.
Make sure you send me a bottle.
I certainly will.
I'm definitely keen to try that. Why did you try that? That's quite an interesting idea, isn't it, the polytunnel concept? And did you get any hostility? Because I know some people around in the countryside aren't keen on polytunnels because of the environmental look.
Yeah, it is a contentious issue. There's an awful, you can understand that being in the area we're in with a lot of fruit going on, that there is a lot of people who are have got tunnels up for different reasons. Neighbours don't like it, without a doubt. But I think you have to be sympathetic and do it in the right way and not do it right next to people's houses. It is only an acre, and it's not a, whilst the metal structures are permanent, they can still come out. The polythene isn't actually on for that long, so it's not too much of an eyesore, really.
I've heard polytunnels where you chuck it out after a season.
No. These go from season to season. You just roll them up and keep them at the sides. Eventually, they'll become too brittle and they'll break up, but they will do quite a few vintages.
And do you think it's going to be economically viable, or is this more of a bit of fun for you?
I'm sure it's not at all viable economically. Even if we were to be able to charge £25-30 a bottle, it's not going to be something that makes us want to put the whole vineyard under polythene. It is purely just a little bit of fun, really, and a way of producing something different. Because we do have a lot of people that stay at the vineyard, a lot of people eat in the restaurant.
I was going to say, you've got accommodation on site, yeah. You've got a restaurant on site. Do people use you as a function activity, you know, if you do corporate away days, or who comes to visit you guys?
Most of the people that come are coming on weekend breaks, they're people that haven't got the time necessarily to go abroad, want to stay in the vineyard. They can stay in the rooms and sit in their rooms and look out over the vineyard, and when the sun comes out, sit in the restaurant out on the balcony and feel like they're in a different country. It's, it is a very nice setting. It is more of that market than it is the corporate market, because one of the things we don't do is we won't shut down our restaurant for a private function such as a wedding or corporate, because the locals are missing out, and the locals have become quite an important part. And it's quite interesting, when I first got involved with Three Choirs, we were very much a tourist venue, and we were quite profitable between the months of May through till September. Had a lot of coach parties came out, and it was quite a thriving business, but it was absolutely dead between sort of October right the way through till April. And so to run a business on an annual basis profitably was very difficult. But none of the locals ever came to see us. And now the restaurant is a local venue. So we have a new clientele, if you like.
Yeah.
And they're very important to us right the way through the year. We don't have the space for function rooms as such. We do smallish events for sort of anything up to sort of 16, 20 people we can cope with. And we can do a very bespoke, good job for them. But the large corporate sort of market is not what we're aiming for at the moment.
Okay, well, that's fantastic, Martin. How hard is it to find you guys?
It's pretty easy, really. If you can get yourself to Gloucester, then...
You're not on a railway or anything like that?
No, we're quite away. We're about 12 miles outside of Gloucester. So, really, by car is the only sensible way to find us.
Yeah.
There is a Ledbury, there's a train station there, but it's still... It would be a taxi ride in. So sensibly, it's a car or a minibus or a coach or whatever.
Okay, excellent, Martin. Thank you very much for your time.
That's okay.
Cheers, mate.